Today on the UW Medicine Pulse Podcast, one of the most promising and exciting fields in medical research, using stem cells to repair damaged organs, like a heart muscle left scarred and weakened after a heart attack.
And so it was really an oh wow moment when we saw our first dishes of essentially sheets of beating human heart muscle, and then the realization that we could grow this up in virtually limitless quantities.
This is the UW Medicine Pulse with Marty Reamer. Real-world stories of the discoveries being made at UW Medicine and the impact they're having on people here in the Pacific Northwest and around the world.
The year is 2034. It's a World Cup year.
Go USA!
NASA has plans to launch the first manned mission to Mars in 2034.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
And a new field of medicine has emerged called regeneration medicine.
So I'm a heart failure guy. I'm a heart guy. That's what I'm working on. And I can see the day when we will start growing back pieces of people's hearts. I think the same kinds of things will be happening with retinal blindness, macular degeneration, common things like that. I think providing new insulin-producing cells for patients who are diabetics, new dopamine-producing cells for patients with Parkinson's disease, people who, like me, who have lousy knees, but I don't have any cartilage. The rest of the bones are okay, so if we could just resurface these babies, I wouldn't have to go get a whole joint replacement. I just need a resurfacing.
That guy, who might be a candidate for a dose of new lab-grown knee cartilage in the year 2034, is UW Medicine physician scientist and stem cell researcher Chuck Murray.
I'm old enough that when I was in school, there wasn't stem cell research. The only thing we ever thought about in terms of stem cells was in the blood. And that's where all of our concepts of stem cells have come from, understanding bone marrow transplantation and how the blood gets formed. There was a revolution in biology in the 90s where we learned that stem cells were at the root of all kinds of things in our bodies. And then when human embryonic stem cells came on the scene, that was a very much a game changer.
Stem cells have been in the news quite a bit since that biological revolution in the 1990s. As a result, when we went out on the streets of Seattle recently to ask people what they knew about stem cells, everyone seemed to be aware of them, but few knew what they actually did.
What are stem cells?
Stem cells. I know that you can get them out of a baby's umbilical cord.
I'm not sure what they are, but a lot of research says that they're beneficial if we can take them and reuse them.
Cells that make up like the nervous system, so like the brain.
Do you have stem cells in your body right now?
No, because I'm alive.
All right, so what do you know about stem cells?
Stem cells are cells that they like exist inside your body, but they don't have a specific purpose yet.
That last one's actually pretty close. Okay, let's get everyone on the same page as to what stem cells are and the important biological function they fulfill. The human body contains hundreds of different types of cells that are important for our daily health. There are cells that are responsible for making our hearts beat, our brains think, our kidneys clean, our intestines digest, and on and on and on.
So stem cells are a cell that can become any other type of cell.
April Stempian Otero is also a UW Medicine physician and researcher whose stem cell work parallels Chuck Murray's.
So it is the cell that can become a nerve cell or a muscle cell or a blood vessel cell. The ultimate stem cell would be, of course, the fertilized egg, right? Because it can become anything in the body.
Stem cells, in the simplest definition, are a very simple, non-specialized cell type that has two unique properties. They can divide like crazy. They can give rise to a daughter cell that is more specialized, goes on to become a heart cell or a brain cell or a skin cell or something like that. And then they can undergo something called self-renewal. So if they divide and you have two daughters, one goes on to be more specialized and the other goes back to repopulate the stem cell compartment so we don't run out of stem cells. That's sort of the gig that you have if you're a stem cell.
Most research focuses on two types of stem cells. There are embryonic stem cells and somatic or adult stem cells.
Adult stem cells, and these are the ones that are found in the body of all of us who are up walking around. So we have bone marrow cells that repopulate our blood. We have skin stem cells that repopulate skin, those in the gastrointestinal tract that resurface the lining of our intestines and so forth. And what we know about those cells is that they are restricted. They can't become virtually anything in the body unless we take some extraordinary measures.
We'll talk about those extraordinary measures a little later, because that in itself is an evolving field in stem cell research, how to make adult stem cells more flexible. But for now, let's get to the other main type of stem cell used in research, the embryonic stem cell. Those are the ones that originate from embryos 4 or 5 days after the egg has been fertilized. Embryonic stem cells are what are called pluripotent.
It has infinite potential, the stem cell that can become anything.
Which is what makes pluripotent cells the rock stars of stem cells. They can become liver cells, blood cells, skin cells, or in the case of the work being done at UW Medicine by Chuck Murray and one of his primary colleagues, Michael LaFlamme, they can become heart cells.
Turns out the heart is probably second to last, probably after the brain, in its inability to sort of repair under normal conditions. And we know that's the case because when you have a heart attack or something called a myocardial infarction, it often leads to something called heart failure. So when you lose the muscle after a heart attack, it's replaced by scar tissue. So those adult stem cells, those resident stem cells in the heart, don't have a whole lot of efficacy, at least under normal situations. So here in Seattle, we've been focusing on pluripotent stem cells, and probably the most famous example of that are embryonic stem cells, which are, you know, the stem cells that have been in the news for a while because of, you know, sort of the political issues surrounding them. But in contrast to many of these adult stem cell types, embryonic stem cells, they definitely make heart muscle cells. And so actually, when I was first working with different stem cell types, we were, you know, trying everything to push bone marrow cells and some of these other cells that people claim became heart muscle without any success. The first time we had a plate of embryonic stem cells, they just did it. And we had beating heart muscle cells in the dish. And I was kind of sold from that moment on.
So these are the folks that do the real work. So Ben is the guy in the lab that's kind of our stem cell guru.
Ben Marty, nice to meet you.
That grows the stem cells and is got the expertise in differentiating them into the heart muscle cells. And so those tan boxes you see there are the incubators that basically keep them warm and the right levels of oxygen and carbon dioxide to keep them happy. And there he's looking at a plate of those cells.
So the question that Murray, LaFlamme, and Stempian Otero are asking is, can heart muscle cells grown in the laboratory from stem cells be injected or grafted onto a damaged heart to kickstart the repair process, something that nature itself fails to do?
If we're looking at this heart, you can see that this would be an artery that's coming down the front wall. And so imagine that we had an occlusion right there. And so this sector of heart muscle that would be fed by these blood vessels would be deficient in blood flow and would start to die off. And you only get about 15 minutes before cell death starts to happen in the heart. And so what happens then, so you'd lose a wedge of heart muscle like so. And what we're going to do is put a catheter into the patient, come up from the groin probably, snake the catheter up the aorta and then across the aortic valve down into the left ventricle. And then from the it's an inside out, and the catheter will have a little needle at the end, kind of like a stiletto knife. So then you position the catheter up against the inside lining of the heart, and you give a little small injection of cells. Then you pull back and you reposition and do it 30, 40 times, something like that.
That's the plan, at least. The first significant challenge in that process of repairing damaged heart tissue with lab-grown cells was to grow the cells, specifically to prod stem cells in the laboratory into becoming heart muscle cells, or beaters, as they are affectionately called by Dr. Murray's team.
The first big moment was when we really started to get a handle on learning how to control the differentiation of our stem cells. When we began differentiating them, we would do them in little clumps, and we would add crude factors like serum, for example, which is a component of blood, and that would stimulate their differentiation, but down many pathways all at once. So the cells ran pell-mell in 20, 24 different directions, and we ended up with little balls of uncoordinated stuff, and we would find these little beating spots in them, but it would only be maybe 5% of the population would actually be beating heart muscle, and the rest was everything else the body could make practically. And so through trial and error and taking lessons from developmental biology, we were able to figure out the chemical signals that are required to make development happen in a dish. And now we can get 80 or 90% of cells in the dish to be beating cardiac muscle. And so it was really an oh wow moment when we saw our first dishes of essentially sheets of beating human heart muscle. And then the realization that we could grow this up in virtually limitless quantities. It was just time and money that was limiting. There was nothing intrinsically limiting by nature.
There it's coming into focus.
That's amazing.
Isn't that cool? This is several thousand heart muscle cells we're looking at this magnification, so we can zoom in.
It's just wild. They don't even know what they're doing. They're just
doing their thing. Yeah. It is what they're doing. And they, if you notice, they all connect to each other and everybody beats in synchrony, just like in the normal heart.
Well, if I'm being completely honest, one of the reasons I like to work with heart muscle cells is they do something, right? So if you're studying neurons, they just sit there, I don't know, thinking in the dish, but they don't do anything you can see visually. But
so they're physically moving.
Yes, you can see them. Sometimes you can see it with the naked eye. We call it a flying carpet. You'll see a little rippling sheet of heart muscle cells. So there's sort of immediate gratification. You can tell whether you're doing your differentiation right because you'll see them beating in the dish.
The next hurdle was to implant those heart cells into animals with damaged heart tissue to see if cultured cells from the laboratory would take and align themselves with the existing healthy part of the host heart. Would new blood vessels grow to feed the implanted cells? Would the new cells beat with the right rhythm?
So we started off with transplant station studies in rats. And so there, again, you can do an infarct model. And we showed, that was the first time we showed that the cells would engraft, that they would survive after we transplanted them. They would partially remuscularize the infarct scar. And that was the first time we saw an improvement in the function of the heart. So the global function of the heart was improved. It wasn't brought back up fully to the level of a normal heart, but somewhere in between. Enough of a difference that if you saw that sort of change in a human being, it would make a big difference in their quality of life and function and so forth. And then later, we moved on to a guinea pig. So a rat is about maybe 300 grams. The guinea pigs are maybe 750, so about double the size. And that was, almost a tenfold increase in the number of cells we delivered. So each step we were increasing the complexity of the model and increasing the number of cells we had to generate. And it was in that guinea pig model that we showed for the first time that these cells, after we transplanted them and they formed new heart muscle, that new heart muscle was electrically synchronized with the host. So that was the first time we showed that it was firing in synchrony. And then beginning, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, we did these large animal studies. Again, whole other order of magnitude in terms of complexity and cell number requirements. So there, every animal got a billion cardiomyocytes. So we went from 10 million per animal to 100 million per animal to now 1 billion. And that's sort of the rough cell number that we think we would need in a human heart. So when a human being has a heart attack, the typical number is you lose about a billion cardiomyocytes. So that's about the number we'd want to restore.
So where we are right now is we have a fair bit of success in non-human primates. We've been able to repopulate about 40% of the damaged region of a monkey's heart attack with human heart muscle. So that's very encouraging. And what we found is that heart muscle organizes into tissue. It grows in its own blood vessels from the surrounding host. It sends come hither signals to the blood vessels, basically, that grow in. And they connect electrically and beat in synchrony with the host heart. So that was the gratifying and the exciting part, that we've been able to grow this much muscle back and that it is beating in sync. The big surprise that we've run into so far in the monkey studies, never seen in any of the small animal studies, is that it destabilizes the heart from an electrical standpoint. And so we get what are called arrhythmias, rhythm disturbances. And so for a period of a couple of weeks after we transplant these cells in, we get very rapid heart rates, and the monkeys are in and out of this rhythm called ventricular tachycardia. And so that was an eye-opening discovery that we did not suspect at all from working in mice, rats, or guinea pigs.
Obviously, the plan is to build this up to a human model, and when human testing begins, which according to Dr. Murray may happen in as little as 4 or 5 years, it's the parallel work of UW Medicine's April Stempien Otero that will be called into play.
The cells they put in the monkeys, the next step will be putting them in humans. And the question is, what humans do you put them in safely? And so I use this group of patients who are getting a left ventricular assist device, which is a heart pump, as a bridge to heart transplantation. And so they basically don't need their heart because the pump is doing all the work. And they're not going to need their heart because they're going to get transplanted. So our goal is to be able to use that patient population to inject the cells and then be able, when we take the heart transplant out, to actually see what happens. We're currently working with Dr. Murray's lab closely in designing these types of trials. We're still about 4 years away from finalizing them. We have to determine what are the potential side effects. Do the patients need immune suppression so that they don't attack the cells that we put in? Is there a way of modifying the cells we put in so that they are cannot be seen by the immune system? And these are the types of questions that Dr. Murray's working out, and we're working out with him in designing these clinical trials. But the exciting thing will be to have a model that we can actually see the cells integrating into the heart by being able to look at this tissue at the time of transplant.
So the stage is set. As April Stempien Otero points out, there are still issues and questions. There's the political question of where these stem cells are harvested from. Public education, to some degree, would help with that, says Michael LaFlamme.
Sometimes people get confused and think every time you're doing an experiment, you need a new embryo, and that's actually not the case. So these cells are almost, you can almost think of them as immortal. And so for most of our work, we're using an embryonic stem cell line that was from the original paper where embryonic stem cells were first described by scientists at Wisconsin. So this was a cell line that was described in the literature in 1998. And because they can be expanded essentially forever in the dish, we can kind of go back to the well and use those same cells.
One way to avoid the controversy connected with embryonic stem cells and at the same time resolve the issue of tissue rejection, because even though the heart cells being grown today come straight from stem cells, they are not the patient's own stem cells, is to use what are called induced pluripotent cells. Remember a moment ago when Dr. Murray said that adult stem cells are restricted, they can't become any cell in the body unless we take extraordinary measures? In other words, it can be done. And according to Michael LaFlamme, if you do take those extraordinary measures, you can create induced pluripotent stem cells.
This is where you can take a normal cell. People typically talk about taking skin fibroblasts, so something that you can get from just a simple biopsy. You can even obtain it from tugging out a few hairs. And we now have the ability to convert those cells into a state that's very similar to embryonic stem cells. Basically, you're kind of pushing them back to a ground state. And those cells, once you have them, are pretty much equivalent to embryonic stem cells. And the same techniques that we've developed to cause those to become cardiomyocytes work with those cells equivalently. Well, first of all, they have the advantage they might overcome some of the ethical issues people are concerned about with embryonic stem cells, because there's no embryos involved at any point in this. The other advantage is I could, in principle, take skin cells from you, convert those into iPS cells, convert those iPS cells into heart muscle cells. Now, those are genetically matched to you, and so there wouldn't be any immune barrier to overcome there.
So what does all this mean for you? As I mentioned at the outset, stem cell research like the kind that's being pursued very aggressively at UW Medicine by Drs. Murray, LaFlamme, and Stempien Otero is one of the most exciting fields in medicine. It holds the promise to revolutionize care the way antibiotics did. And we're not talking about the distant future. With human trials expected to begin in 4 or 5 years, Dr. Murray expects a direct impact on the way we treat heart attack patients not long thereafter.
I think we start making a major impact on public health in 10 years. I think that's how long it will take to... There's typically three levels of clinical trials that have to be done, getting progressively bigger and initially being very safety-focused and looking more and more towards efficacy in the later stages, in stages 2 and 3. By the time we'd complete a phase 3 trial and have a product ready to release to the masses, about a decade, I'd say.
And once some of these early issues related to stem cell differentiation and harvesting and grafting are resolved, Well, just ask, and you'll find these researchers dreaming up all sorts of fascinating applications.
You were talking about, when you mentioned embryonic stem cells, that they're essentially immortal. Is that what this all leads to eventually, is immortality in a way, that you, that our parts just get replaced?
That's sort of the dream of regenerative medicine, and it's one of the nice but also complicating things of these pluripotent stem cells, so embryonic stem cells and these iPS cells that we're talking about, is that they can become anything. Whether we'll ever get to the, you know, future where, you know, we're ordering parts on Amazon or whatever, that's down the road. Yeah. But we're making a lot of progress, and a lot of things that would have seemed like science fiction when we were starting a decade ago, in fact, sort of a routine activity now.
I want to thank Drs. Chuck Murray, Michael LaFlemme, and April Stempy and Otero for sharing their time and their expertise with us today. To find out more about the stem cell research being championed at UW Medicine, or to send us feedback about today's topic, visit our website, uwmedicine.org/pulse. And please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes to get every episode as soon as they are released. UW Medicine Pulse is produced by Tina Knoll, written by Patrick McGlone. I'm Marty Reamer. Thanks for listening.